The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're going to talk a bit about mental toughness and sport. Plenty of examples of it over the last few days, with Europe's win in the Ryder Cup, Kilkenny's in the All-Ireland Hurling Replay, and Cork's in the Ladies' Football Final. Joining us now from Athlone, sports psychologist Keith Begley. On the line, we also have Sunday Independent journalist and author Paul Kibbage. And first of all, we're going to talk to Cork Ladies' Football captain Breage Corkery. Breage, good morning.
Hi, John. How are you?
And how are the celebrations going?
Very well, I suppose. We're club championships now at the weekend, so we're going to have to calm down again. But we've had a good few days.
Well, listen, congratulations again on your great success on Sunday. And we're going to have a listen now to, I suppose, most of the Cork team, and this is shortly after the game ended. So, Breage, explain to us the significance of "Don't give up until it's over."
I suppose there's a song Eamon brought on to us in 2005, in our first year out. It was probably the last song that was played on the bus in 2005, and it was the last song played on the bus on Sunday as well. It's just something he always tells us, not to don't ever give up, just keep driving on. And I suppose It doesn't just apply to sport, it applies to, you know, everything in life, really.
Mm. And I'm just conscious of the fact that we say with 15 minutes to go on Sunday, you were, what, 10 points behind?
Yeah, I think so. I think we were down 10 points. I suppose thoughts came into our head, maybe we should just try and make a game out of it, first of all. You know, we didn't want to go down being beaten very well by anybody, so we just wanted to make a game out of it and keep tipping over the points. And there's Riley and Angela and myself left on the 21-yard line, and we just said, it's time to drive on now. We can't be beaten by so much, and that's exactly what they did.
So you had a little meeting on the 20-metre line?
We just happened to meet together, and we just looked at each other and we just said, you either lie down or you get up and fight.
And you decided to get up and fight with great results.
I suppose we had some great subs to come on, and we all believed in each other, and I suppose that's a huge thing for us.
Yeah, and given your record of success in ladies football, there obviously is a lot of mental toughness in the squad.
I suppose the biggest thing is girls are grounded as well, and that's what it all comes down to as well, and you know that we all respect each other and we respect the management, and we just love playing football, and you know you just kind of have to keep your calm and be as tough as you can when you're out on the pitch.
And that was certainly in evidence on Sunday. But given that you've won so many times, is there not a danger that you sort of lose the appetite?
I suppose at times, you know, maybe at times last year we didn't really perform to perfection, you know, and you know we just had to aim, and was just like, you're on the top for so long and they all want to push you off it, and you might as well enjoy it while you're up there. So we were saying, you know, just keep enjoying it and drive on.
You're enjoying it. Yeah, I want to bring in Paul Kimmage now. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, John.
And you've had the pleasure of, I suppose, shadowing Paul McGinley over the last few weeks. You did a big interview with him, I think, 3 weeks ago, and you also wrote about him on Sunday. And he's been given credit for masterminding the European victory in the Ryder Cup. Meticulous planning along the way as well.
Well, I think the bottom line, John, is that if you switch the two captains around and put Paul in charge of the Americans and Tom Watson in charge of the Europeans at the weekend, the Americans will be going home with the Ryder Cup. That's what such a good job that's the job that Paul did. He was absolutely magnificent. I mean, he's dedicated his life to this for the last 2 years, and it's a cliche to say he left no stone unturned, but he did. I mean, you have to see the detail of the small things in the team room, you know, blue and yellow goldfish in European team colours to a ridiculous degree. But that was just, you know, the extreme of it. The most important thing he was doing was, you know, at all of the tournaments during the summer, he was pairing guys, and Victor de Buisson and Graham McDill come to mind. Anytime they were playing in the same tournament, they were playing together. Now, they didn't know it at the time, but that's what Paul was thinking. He was getting them comfortable in each other's company. And the success of the European team, in my view, is down uniquely to Paul McGinley's management at the weekend.
Mm. And there was also talk of mantras and images in the team room that I think Rory McIlroy spoke about it afterwards, that nothing was left to chance.
Yeah, he did everything. I mean, he had Alex Ferguson coming in, and people would say, well, what will Ferguson contribute other than talking about how great Manchester United were? Well, actually, there was a reason behind that, a very good reason, in that most of Ferguson's United team started as favourites, as Paul's team were at the weekend, and he was in a good position to be able to tell them about, you know, how to deal with the tag of being favourites, how to deliver when you are favourites, and it's overcome that. And that was one example. He had Lee Westwood, who was a member of the team in Brookline, who are beaten. They'd gone into the last day in Brookline, the Europeans, with a 10-6 lead. Lee Westwood was on that team. He happened to be on the team on Sunday. Paul made Lee Westwood give the speech on the night before to tell the team what it was like to be overturned with a 10-6 lead, because that's the lead the Europeans had again mm-hmm. on Sunday. So he drew from every source in order to get his team performing at the very best.
Yeah, and there must have been a lot of mental strength in it as well, because Paul McGinley's career in golf set beside Tom Watson's career. In fact, I think Tom Watson was one of Paul McGinley's heroes. So in approaching the match and in leading the team last weekend, he had to more or less turn that on its head and see Tom Watson as the foe.
Well, he did, and Tom Watson very much was a foe, and you know he was. Tom Watson was Paul's absolute sporting hero. But what the advantage Paul had, and this is not something you could actually say before he went into the weekend, but there was a big call 2 years ago when Tom Watson was appointed the American captain. There was a big call among the European team to appoint someone of a similar stature from Europe, you know, a major winner, to go against one of the great icons of golf in Tom Watson. And Paul was clear in his own mind, adamant in his own mind, that look, there's no correlation between, you know, a great individual golfer and a team manager. And you see it across all sports. Alex Ferguson, not a great footballer. Arsene Wenger, not a great footballer. Mourinho, not a great footballer, but great managers. And Paul knew that was the most important thing, that the fact that he hadn't won a major and Tom Watson had won eight of them, you know, ultimately that wasn't going to matter when they got in there at the weekend and we're going to manage their respective teams. That the most important thing was to do your homework, do your job, and apply yourself to the task. Now, Paul did that, applied himself for 2 years, and Tom Watson turned up at the weekend and had done no homework at all and was exposed for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was indeed. Let me bring in sports psychologist Keith Begley. Keith, good morning.
Good morning, John.
And Keith, you're listening there to Paul talking about the mental strength shown by Paul McGinley. In golf, that is one particular sport where the mental side of things is pretty clear and straightforward, isn't it?
Absolutely. Look, an awful lot of mental issues and mental strength come back to kind of your formation, really, from a child and your willingness to train and the time and the hours they would have put in, and all these golfers going back to the time they were 7, 8, 9, 10 and through their development. And that mental strength is kind of born out of their ambition and drive to persist with their sport, you know, when things may not be going with them, American team included. So any guy that's making it to the, you know, the PGA Tours would have a huge amounts of mental resolve and mental strength. I think possibly the main thing between the US team and the European team was the leadership style that Paul McGinley would have elicited, as opposed to Tom Watson's, which was kind of found out with Phil Mickelson's assertions, you know, after the tournament.
Yeah,
you know,
we can actually have a reminder now of what Phil Mickelson had to say about his captain. Here he is now.
I think that Paul Azinger did. One was, he got everybody invested in the process. He got everybody invested in who they were going to play with, who the picks were going to be, who was going to be in their pod, who when they would play, and they had a great leader for each pod. In my case, we had Ray Floyd, and we hung out together, and we were all invested in each other's play. We were invested in picking Hunter that week. Anthony, Kim, and myself, and Justin were in a pod, and we were involved on having Hunter be our guy to fill our pod. So we were invested in the process. We all do the best we can, and we're all trying the hardest. And I'm just looking back at what gave us the most success, because we use that same process in the President's Cup, and we do really well. And unfortunately, we have strayed from a winning formula in 08 for the last three Ryder Cups, and we need to consider maybe getting back to that formula that helped us play our best.
Ouch, Keith, that was an example of somebody abandoning ship pretty quickly, and the ship being Tom Watson and his captaincy.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's an element of blame there, and you know, it maybe sounds like sour grapes, but you know, there's an awful lot of merit in what he says, in the sense that when we talk about team management and whatnot, leadership style would have a huge impact on chance of success. You know, if you look at kind of an awful lot of this would transfer into the corporate world as well, in business and education, with what's called transformational leadership, where managers are, you know, coaches kind of empower players and by the behaviours that they elicit, you know, which can have a huge effect on group cohesion, you know, and setting of high performance expectations, where they basically what they're doing is they're making players feel involved and valued, and like Phil Mickelson says, invested in the whole process. And what that does really is it develops a huge, strong collective efficacy, whereby players really want to do well for the team, because of the nature of the leadership. So to contrast, I suppose, Paul McGinley and Tom Watson's, Mickelson's assertions afterwards would suggest that, you know, that McGinley would have a much more kind of transformational style than Tom Watson would have done. And we've seen this across a range of sports. I mean, Jimmy McGuinness and Donegal arguably has brought, you know, through a change of leadership style, you know, has engaged players and brought Donegal from, we'll say, 18th ranked team maybe 3-4 years ago to, you know, up to first, second, top three, certainly in the last 2 to 3 years, you know. And we've seen it across various sports. You know, Alex Ferguson did it with Man United in a short space of time.
Sure.
From a 20-year gap of winning very little to dominating British and even possibly European football for over the course of maybe 15, 20 years. Mm.
We're going to take a trip down memory lane now and listen to one master of confidence. This is Muhammad Ali before his fight with George Foreman in 1974.
Bad. Been chopping trees. I done something new for this fight. I done wrestled with an alligator. That's right. I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail. That's bad. Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
Bad dude.
Bad. Fast. Last night, I cut the light off in my bedroom, hit the switch, was in the bed before the room was dark.
Incredible.
Fast.
Incredible.
And you, George Foreman, all of you chumps are gonna bow when I whoop him. All of you. I know you got him. I know you got him picked, but the man's in trouble. I'm gonna show you how great I am.
Yes, indeed, a great man to talk and to put those actions, those words into action in a boxing ring. That was the great Muhammad Ali. Paul Kimmage, I'm just wondering about great examples of leadership in sport. You're obviously quoting Paul. You're putting the focus on Paul McGinley, but have you other examples of where leadership in sport won the day?
Well, I think the key for last weekend is that, you know, golf is an individual sport. These guys play as individuals for, you know, 99% of the time, and then they come together every 2 years to play in a team sport. And Paul understood that, you know, it was very different. What they were going to be doing at the weekend was very different to what they do every other day of the week. Now, you know, other example, I think the key for Paul, and this applies to all sports, is, you know, Paul needed to understand his players, their personalities, what made them gel, and this is the key point, whether they respond to a pat on the back or a kick in the behind. And that is the key to all good management. And if you look across sports at good managers, they all understood that and understand that. And we've mentioned Ferguson several times now. He would have been one who understood that. The guys who respond to praise are the guys who respond to criticism. And once you have that, then you can excel.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, thank you for joining us this morning. Also, thanks to Breej Corkery and to Keith Begley.